Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to This Might Be The News. My name is Rory and I'll be your host today throughout the next 45 minutes of uninformed political commentary. This week I'm joined by my favourite Tory, Alex Wheeler.
Bless.
And first time guest, Nia.
Hello.
How are you both?
Good, yeah. Bit nervous, bit underprepared, but I'm going to see how we fare.
You'll fit right in. Well, we're back for what I'm trying to call a second series. I don't know if you'd call the last thing that we did a series, but technically we made some podcasts and they ran in chronological order. So for those who haven't listened before, I invite two friends to join me every week to talk about what might have happened over the last 7 days. It's just that I tend not to give them much advance notice of what we're going to talk about and try to discourage any kind of research. So let's see how we get on. The way we open every episode is with a feature called The Facts.
Facts.
So we're in good company. Lots of great things are back this week. Taylor Swift's back. Are you excited about that, Alex?
She is. She's an all right icon. Absolutely love Taylor Swift. Half, you know, she's got two eyes like chip glaciers and cheekbones you could smash a coconut on. Absolutely right. I'm happy that Taylor Swift is back.
Bake Off. Any alt right messages?
You know, we really are against the mixing of icing. No, I take that back. That's a bit glib. No, nothing there. Noel Fielding likes to dress like a degenerate. That's probably about the only thing happening there.
And obviously, Theresa May is back in the papers. I was really unaware, but I was actually enjoying the little break.
The absence.
The respite yeah. that we had from Theresa May. She's back in the news this week. She's in Japan. And she's been sort of quoted as saying she's not a quitter. She's going nowhere. She is going to lead the Tories into the next general election, and she will win. She will win.
She will win in the same way that Gandalf will also win against the Balrog, as he says, they shall not pass, and then gets torn down into the abyss. Exactly right.
Oh, I think that's the one scene of Lord of the Rings I've seen where he's got the big stick, and then
he's got the big stick. That's
and
right.
He falls down. He falls off.
He does. Spoiler. He does.
For anyone who hasn't seen
that. So, I mean, from what I know, I believe that there are Tories that may beg to differ with Theresa May about she's not going anywhere and that she's going to lead the party. Alex, you're kind of a man on the inside here, and that you speak to other Tories.
I think you know, you've got like the bar rattlers like Lord Heseltine making a lot of noise, George Osborne, other bitter, mostly Ramonas sort of airing their grievances. It's more of a projection of something else. Like they don't like Theresa May because they kind of lump her together with the current direction of the Conservative Party, and any infighting that does it taking place within the party, I think is just, like I say, you've got these two strands, you know, Eurosceptic and Europhiles, who just are still raging away, and it doesn't seem to be able to reconcile itself yet.
It's a bit of a nightmare, really, isn't it, for them?
Well, shit.
It's all very simple for Labour, I'm sure. But so one of the things I've noticed, though, is that there's a new contender that we weren't talking about. We definitely weren't talking about him 6 months ago.
I never stopped talking about him.
Other than him being the only enjoyable sort of person from the right that appears in Have I Got News For You. So Jacob Rees-Mogg is now
the
second most popular candidate to take over from May after
I
David.
Had absolutely no idea who he was.
So Nia, I asked you guys to research this. Alex didn't need anything. What have you been up to this week when I asked you to look into Jacob Rees-Mogg?
Well, I looked him up and I found out that he said the longest word in Parliament. That was my first Google fact.
Yeah.
I couldn't memorise that word to tell you today.
Floxy moxy pillification, I think that's what
it's
it was.
Pretty much like that, yeah.
Don't be as floxy and moxy in it. And
does have you.
And he's got six kids. He's a great Instagrammer. That's what I found. He's just started up an Instagram account and he's quite self-deprecating. And I was quite attracted to that.
And the dress sense,
yeah. But
and this is kind of what's happening, isn't it? You're like a reflection of how the momentum has begun. Is that people just like going on Instagram these days? Mm. And if you're quite funny.
Yeah. So I've been on Instagram. I've seen all his quotes, all his photos, and he's quite self-deprecating and like quite funny and in his own conservative way. And I was like, 8's not that bad this week. And then I've just been presented with his voting record.
Oh yeah?
Not, somehow my mind has been changed.
Not the light and breezy content you're expecting.
Not the equal rights that I love and know. No.
It's not all about
homophobia that. With a smile, is it? Is
that, yes, is that what you're saying? Yeah,
okay. Okay, take us through it then, the pair of you. What have we what's standing
so
out?
So I've only just had a look through these voting records, so maybe we live.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so he has consistently voted against articles pertaining to gay rights with marriage, any kind of same-sex legislation that has been trotted out. He's consistently voted against it. He's kind of more on the libertarian, traditional family unit end of the spectrum. He's against things like smoking bans, against the Human Rights Act, which, so again, is a very... so yeah, obviously, the scoffing makes it sound like the Human Rights Act is the only tangible document that is allowed to exist to enshrine human rights. But obviously, Magna Carta be repping that shit for a much longer period of time with better results.
It just doesn't sound good when you want to tear up the Human Rights Act. Mm. The Human Rights Act sounds like a thing I want.
Yeah.
Sure.
But not that I know anything about it. What is his justification for the vote, always voting against same-sex legislation?
So the MOG is he's Catholic, right. So he approaches things from the Christian conservative end of the spectrum, but I also, for which doesn't apply to myself, but I think it's very key because he is like the based conservative. The reason why he has this following, the reason why he's so popular, is because he is the emperor of the grassroots conservatives, people who are generally very pro family unit, mm-hmm. patriotic with a small p, would probably classically, lower middle, upper middle class, skilled tradespeople, accountants, stuff like that. I don't know, people who like the idea of being proud of your country, who like the idea of supporting the family unit, and those things are sort of primary in their concerns. Those are the main areas. I mean, he's also quite a big fan of things like flat tax, low welfare.
Because he made a fortune in the city, didn't he?
That's his
background.
Yeah, he's like a billionaire of investments.
Got loads of Fabergé eggs.
His dad was the most well-regarded editor of the Times of this century, the last 100 years. He wrote that whole... Don't Kill a Butterfly with a Car or something?
Oh, I don't know.
I'd like to read it.
He wrote the article about Mick Jagger in jail.
Yes, I did see that. Yeah,
for drugs. So he's done all right, old Jake.
Absolutely.
and so people are a fan of him. Is he the leader that you and your squad?
Absolutely. Well, the short answer is yes.
Been wanting,
but it's never going to happen. There's no precedent for it. A backbench MP has never risen to the dizzying heights of taking the top job. He's not even a minister yet. It's never going to happen. All this is flotsam and jetsam and froth cultivated probably mostly by the Guardian because it's been a bit of a quiet August. Like, I love it all. I enjoy it because it's got a certain punk fuck you element about it. There is a tradition. There's someone that stands for the family, that stands for the nation, that stands for wholesome conservative notions, lower tax, stuff like that, which we don't hear any discourse about from the front benches of the Conservative Party. So this is almost like a reminder to grassroots conservatives that, don't worry guys, even though it looks awful, we've got the Maybot, we've got all of this watered down rubbish about Brexit that we can't survive with from our own party, but there's still this guy. It's almost like, look, it's a bit like that photograph.
Stick
of,
with us.
Exactly. It's a bit like that photograph of Putin stroking a kitten. It's like, I know I've done all these things in like Donbass and human rights record, but look at this cat. Look at it.
Yeah, he's a light moment. Comic edge to...
I would love it to be true. Sorry, I'm getting too excited, but I really want to.
But, I mean, Mia, would you describe yourself as sort of an ordinary voter who would is open-minded to all the parties?
I'm open-minded. I tend to change my mind quite a lot.
That's good. Chasing your vote, it's worth it.
Particular... set of ideals that I stick to, but I do believe in same-sex marriage, I do believe in equal rights, I do believe in the Human Rights Act, whatever form that comes in. So everything that he's voted against I vote for, so I can't. He's a lovely, he seems like a lovely chap, but okay. He's not for me.
So the funny, witty, social media skills aren't enough to convince you
frightening is that loads of people go with social media. So my social media is like full up with left-wing socialist posts about, you know, Labour and Bernie Sanders and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And they see, if people see someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg on Instagram or taking the piss out of himself a little bit, and he's much more likeable as a person, and people tend to forget, or people our age tend to forget to look at stuff like the voting record. And I think
it's very useful though, because I mean, all the things you said make perfect sense to from the basis which you're saying you represent. But the beauty of the Mogg is that he is so, as you say, he's like enigmatic, so likeable. And the beauty of it is that he puts a human face to a set of opinions that so many people would think were morally, such people would say that were morally repugnant, would justify that shutting down their platforms, or maybe even more strenuous countermeasures than that. And someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg shows that he personifies, like, just because you disagree with someone doesn't mean he's a total bastard. And I think that's really very useful. He very aptly represents a traditional vision of Britain that is still actually very popular, but most normal people are very scared to even whisper. Mm. And I think it's good that someone like that exists. Just by the way, it's like, I'm really glad that Jeremy Corbyn exists, because that other side should be, you know, even though I vehemently disagree with it, it should be given the disinfectant of sunlight. It has to be exposed in, you know, in discourse, and then totally destroyed for the ramshackle poisonous collection of vapours that it is. But in a public forum. Yeah. It's cool. No, it's cool. But
I always love your conviction as well. Like, yeah. You believe it. You believe it. That's the main thing. Like, that's
the best. It's weird, but really hard to follow.
Oh, sorry.
But I guess a couple of questions for you. I mean, do we think May is actually going to go anywhere, or is she going to hold on with her claws for the next 2 years at least?
She look, like, no one, if you're going to leave a job, if you're going to leave any position, you can't say when you're going to leave it, because then people are just going to run down the clock and make waves because they know that you're impotent. Hmm. You know, it's a bit like, you know, the lame duck presidential thing, you know, the whatever it is, the 80 days before they leave office, yeah. they can do nothing because the system would just lock up.
Obama.
That's why, exactly.
He just sort of partied with Jay-Z, I think, for the final month.
Well, I
went on boats with Richard Branson.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'd rather party up in here with DMX, but, you know, whatever, different opinions. But no, exactly that. So if May says I'm going in 2 years, then the machine, the 1922 committee, or whatever, if there's anything she does that they don't like, they'll just slow everything down, just grind it down.
Yeah.
And the beauty, and the reason why she's saying I'm going to fight on is because she has to. What will probably happen is we'll get to wherever we're going to get with the negotiations with Mr. Juncker, and then it'll all go sour. She'll get looped with the blame, and then we'll shove her out of the way, and someone else, David Davis.
But he's not credible. David Davis isn't a credible candidate. For
totally don't
agree
with that at all. Why not?
So you've really called me out on the basis there. I'm about to say he's a clown. He's a mug. I don't know. I was watching him on Andrew Marr today. He just didn't seem like well briefed on his own. Well-versed on his own brief, which is Brexit. He seems to sort of just be like fumbling on that. Also, it just sort of seems that overnight he went from, I think he was at Stranger's Bar when he found out that he was going to be made Brexit minister, having been in the political wilderness for, well, ever since he went up against Cameron. Yeah. And then suddenly you're like, oh, that guy, he can be the leader now. Like, sort of, this guy's got...
Come from nowhere.
Yeah, and expect the public to just accept that there's...
If you'll allow me. So no, I don't agree with that at all. David Davis is one of the rarest of things. He's a totally principled member of parliament. He stood against ID cards. Remember back in the day, he had a by-election because he was so concerned about the erosion of individual liberty. If you talk about human rights, David Davis is literally your guy. And by the way, he wants to tear up the Human Rights Act, but he wants to replace it with our own. Mm. He's someone who's a passionate libertarian, traditional classical liberal, you know the idea of letting things play out, and he's in terms of principle, he's already got an extensive back catalogue. In terms of now, he represents one of the chief Brexiteers who's got competence and experience as a minister. Don't ask me which ministerial post he's had, because I can't bloody remember, but he's had at least two or three postings.
I think for me it's this issue of like just anointing new leaders without the public. I think that you need to work for it a bit. I mean, I thought Cameron was the most vanilla, kind of standing for nothing kind of guy you could have as Prime Minister, but he did work for it. And he,
what do you mean?
is it by being in the in your position,
yeah,
and doing that job for a long time,
okay,
and sort of earning the right to lead the party, because what was it, Michael Howard did that sort of, he got everybody wanted a job, okay, right, you all get a brief, and you're going to work for it, and then we'll have a contest, and it's how the Tories seem to be at the moment in this rut of like, whose name can we think of next, who's not fucking up royally, mm-hmm. and let's make them the favourite.
Well, I agree with everything you just said. That's exactly right. But that's because the talent pool from all political parties is so narrow.
Mm.
Because everyone has to be whiter than white, and the amount of personal scrutiny, all this, you know, that people go through is appalling. Like, there's no give anymore. Everyone's got a skelly in their closet, and unfortunately, you know, if any of us were put through that level of scrutiny, they'd probably find something awful that we'd done.
Oh, it's only I do not know what you mean. Yeah, our generation, when we get old enough to be prime ministers and stuff, we're all fucked.
There's just going
to
be a whole generation of just nothing in politics because everyone's just too scared of all
companies. But there's not even any power there anyway. Like, if you really wanted power, why would you be a politician? You have to, like, make all these plays to listen to people and care about what they say. Just become, you know, if you're going to climb a ladder, climb the corporate ladder and join, you know, a company who's supranational, you know, whether it's Google or YouTube or whatever, who are able to control so much more of what people see and hear than politicians ever can. Mm-hmm. That's where power is. So that's why the talent pool, which we'd be stuck with, is shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jacob Rees-Mogg, whatever you say about him, he's clearly intelligent. Goddamn, that's refreshing. He's not afraid to actually say what he thinks, because you look at David Cameron, he was literally, as you say, he's like the heir to Blair. That's what he fucking called himself.
Mm.
This repugnant, false conservative who just shouldered himself to the front by talking about PR and smiling all the time.
Hug a hoodie and a husky. Oh,
I mean, I won't have anything said against huskies. You keep that to yourself. Like,
And, well, I guess just to finish up here, because we do have to wrap up, but what do we think is going to happen with the mog? Do we see him entering cabinet?
Definitely.
Sort of, this is really what he's going for.
I'm a little bit concerned that Mogg is going to be another sort of Enoch Powell figure, where he has such vehement and obvious credentials, levels of intelligence and a following, but he'll probably just get sidelined in the end. I hope I'm wrong, but unfortunately, Jacob Rees-Mogg is also, he's got other very small, like social faux pas and discussions in the past, like speaking at the wrong event, stuff like that, linked to sort of right-wing stuff in the party. That will just come out, and that is just nourishing gruel to the Labour Party, and it could easily be twisted to stop him getting anywhere. So I can't see it. Minister at best.
You heard it here first. Mogg will get taken down by the left when they find out he spoke at some kind of racist farmers' convention.
Not racist farmers. Stop it. Traditional people.
I jest. Anyway, thank you both for helping me establish the facts.
Thank you, Wheeler.
Task Force. So, Nia, every week I happen to get a call on this show. It's been nice actually having a break over the summer from giving my phone a rest. I get a call from someone kind of either famous or vaguely important, and they're begging for my help. And this week I've had a call from the head of the UK's universities. I think that's a thing.
all of the universities.
They've all clubbed together, appointed a leader, and he's getting the courage to call me. Unis are really sort of under fire at the moment. They're getting a lot of bad press. People are saying it's massively overpriced. Mm-hmm. The average student now leaves with a debt of £50,000. The vice-chancellors, they're saying, are paid ridiculously in comparison, and are paying themselves more and more as the years go on. And people are questioning sort of the actual value, the return on investment of, like, what happens when you graduate. Do you get your money back, basically? And Joe Johnson, Boz's brother, who I think is one of the education ministers, has said, yeah, you totally do. You totally do. Everyone who goes to uni gets paid better. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like,
really? I'm not sure about that.
And so the question is, what they've asked me for help is, we need to help people go to university. We need to convince them. Need a bit of a rebrand. Need to make the point. You both went to university. In fact, we went to university together. It's how I know you both.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Would you recommend it?
Would I recommend university?
Yeah, to the next generation.
It depends what you want to do, really.
Yeah.
I don't think I enjoyed university. I don't think that it would have made a difference to where I am today, whether I went or not.
Absolutely.
So you did enjoy university?
I did enjoy, I enjoyed the social aspect of university.
Yeah.
I enjoyed, that's about it, I think. I wasn't really engaged that well with the academics of university. Was not into it at all. I wasn't even sure what the course I was doing was the right course for me. But right. You're under so much pressure from whatever schools you go to. They need to get UCAS points. They need Absolutely. To get in the league tables. So they're pressuring students to get into certain universities. And you're under this pressure in your last kind of 2 years of college to make decisions that actually you might not be ready to make. And it might not be the right decision for you. I'm a massive believer in going to university if you want to as a mature student. And I've only just sort of discovered that that's my
You've just got to that
opinion.
Conclusion.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's a really good point. I think, yeah, as you say, the general process for entering further education is this like enforced, sort of monopolised it's in effect it's like licensing, because we're fed all this bile that you have to go, you must go, it gives you access to great opportunities, all your schools will push you that way and in that direction. And actually, one, many people may not be ready. Two, there's now obviously the much more significant financial risk involved in it. I know obviously it's a loan that isn't, you don't have to pay back as quickly as a conventional one, but it's still going to be a millstone that's going to prevent you from being able to get a house if you don't make any dent in it, and if it just builds up and builds up. The biggest thing about the whole university process, I actually disagree with the whole premise of this discussion, because for me, it's all about every job has licensing. If you want to be an underground train driver, you have to get on the right side of the unions, you have to take an exam which will allow you to be a train driver. That exam may not actually be in the cold light of day if you actually balanced it and weighed it up. The barrier that would define you from being a good or a bad train driver. Universities are exactly the same. It's just a process of licensing that's been enforced and cultivated by obviously the universities themselves, because obviously they make money out of it, to bar people who don't have this monopolised piece of paper from entering the labour market. And I think it's total shit, personally, because exactly as Nir says, the job that I do personally, again, my degree served no purpose. And even if you did engage with the academic process, it's a one-sided singular narrative. You're fed, if in terms of history and politics, which is what I study, you're fed one idea, you're told one set of values, there is no sense of true debate. So what the fuck are you paying for? You're paying for a piece of paper that will allow you to apply for a job with loads of other people, which is already inflated, that allows you what? Nothing.
Well, I don't know, that's a real...
What's your opinion?
I guess the things I'll ask Alex is, did you enjoy university?
Yeah, I mean, it was all right, you know.
Okay. Because
through gritted teeth, people can't actually see that.
Because I'm someone who like definitely agrees. My degree had nothing to do with what I now do, and I've forgotten everything I learned. And it wasn't much what I learned, because I did a humanities degree that meant that I was basically showing up for classes about 3 hours a week, if I had got my shit together. And it is expensive for what it is. And I think, yeah, like the, especially humanities, I think obviously you need to go learn how to be a doctor if you want to be a doctor.
Yeah, I think that's where like a vocational course is really important. Like if you make that decision, if you're lucky enough to know that you want to do that with your life at 17 or 18 years old, then fine, go and do it. Like train as a dentist, a doctor, a vet, whatever.
Yeah.
But if you are a person who isn't sure, is probably going to go and see humanities, like both of us did.
All of us, actually.
I would say there should be an option to go into the working world for 3-4 years and find out how good you are at shit in the real world.
Yeah.
And then make a decision about what you want to do. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being a mature student going back to university, and not enough people do it.
I mean, in terms of the original, so I really agree with that, I think it's awesome. And that's exactly what I would do if I had my time again. But in terms of the premise of the question, how do we get numbers up? I think obviously what it seems to sound like, numbers are already too high, they should be down.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the things that like happened was you ended up with all of these unis charging the same amount, and these unis at the bottom who Looting. Really isn't worth... sort of, it isn't going to get you the job. It's like it's not going to be a value on your CV. Absolutely. And so it's those people realizing that the university isn't the only option. I'd say if you're pretty sure you want to go, I think you should, because I think it is the best thing ever. I loved it. I thought it was the most fun thing I've ever done.
But like fun, like the work that you did was fun as well.
No, so let's separate
social and academic.
Yeah,
at university, we're talking about two completely different things.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy your work? Did you get satisfaction from the work you did at university?
Yes, writing my dissertation, because I think it helped me realise I liked writing, and sort of had a knack for that, and then that's sort of what I went on to do. Yeah. So that, and there is something to be said for writing 10,000 words and getting those to a standard,
sure,
a coherent structure, and investing that amount of time to then produce something that you're very happy with. And I think that does get your brain to a certain new level, or your standards of what good work looks like. Gets it. Alex, you're gagging to say something.
I think that's fair enough, but in terms of my view of the academic process of it, having studied history and politics at Southampton University, was this distinct lack of any kind of open discussion, any kind of alternative views beyond that of a standard, I have to use the, hang on, this word, the set of liberal narrative. If you wanted to debate and understand, discuss things, events in history, political theories, which are in any way away from the liberal hegemony from the centre, you would be pilloried and you'd be battered by your academic professor and indeed marked down.
I remember because we did the same course, and so I'd go to politics lectures and you stood out very quickly.
I had no mates.
To me, I was a real spectator, because I was sort of sitting in the middle. I thought you were all twats, like on the left and the right. At least I think the right was slightly more. I think they smelled better. I think you guys, but you were like one of maybe three lone wolves, sort of making.
Maybe don't call me a lone wolf within what's been going on recently. But yeah, got you.
Yeah, sort of lone rangers then, people who sort of but I remember sort of the level of debate was quite limited from some lecturers. We had a lecturer, I think, I don't know if it was you or someone else, who rated Niall Ferguson, the economic historian, and his lecturer's response, he quoted Niall Ferguson in a seminar, and the lecturer just went, "Niall Ferguson is a cunt." And that was the end of that. And I think, like, totally, yeah, I want my money back if my lecturer's like response is that. There is definitely a left-wing bias at university, for sure.
Well, the biggest problem I think now within to expand upon that, the idea of the safe space culture, the idea of people who are under pressure, who are already anxious, you know, being wrapped up in cotton wool, everything being made, student-proof, is now being extrapolated to real life. And it's the same thing, where the people need to be challenged, made to feel a bit vulnerable. And if that means sitting in a lecture on the British Empire and everyone's saying that, you know, the British were disgusting during partition, you should be able to stand up and say, actually, I think it was great. Actually, Clive Vindia was the original gangster who had excellent clothes and carved out a corner of the earth for our brothers and sisters. Or whatever. I mean, that's just off the top of my head. But do you know what I mean? You should be able to do that, and it doesn't exist, and it's become even less so since we left. And that was a long time ago.
Yeah, and people are a lot...
in the real world
tolerant
as well, like right, left, centrist, wherever you stand in politics and whatever you believe in, it's all fed. You're fed whatever you believe.
Absolutely.
So you read what you believe in. I'm not handed right-wing conservative articles to read, because that's not what appears on my social media.
They're pretty rare, to be honest.
Okay. echo chamber and all that. But I think, and it's definitely the theme of the last few years, is the heads of the student heads of unions and the head of the debating society, whoever it may be, you're hearing these stories that they won't share a stage with someone that they disagree with the opinions of, which isn't healthy at all. But I mean, I kind of read the room early at university when I think another lecturer told me that, like, university undergraduate degrees are not for you having your own opinions and having that kind of debate. Right. It's a very expensive form of comprehension when it comes to a humanities degree. If you can get on board with that, and I was like, okay, cool, right. So
did you
what,
get that told that like early on?
Early on, like, really? Term one. I was like, okay, well, that's a weight off my shoulders. off to Jess's, where they do 50p a pint.
But that's exactly why my degree was a waste of money, because I had to wait until I left university to then have the time to read the books I wanted to read, to understand the philosophers, the historians that I actually always wanted to study at university, but we were never allowed to. And I think that's, if we're going back to the original point, which is how much this costs, if I'm paying the fucking bill, then I'm going to choose what I have to eat. So I don't see why that's unfair.
It's so true, though.
But just, I need to say,
I mean, I'm not bitter. I mean,
as an experience, though, okay, let's talk about the other side. Yeah. As an experience, that whole starting and everyone's like, it's kind of socialist, which is probably why you don't like it, because everyone's sort of, the playing field is evened out. Everyone's in the same kind of room. There's like, it feels a little bit less, like, you can hang out with people from all kinds of backgrounds. Mm-hmm. When I first started to meet people from all kinds of backgrounds.
And we're in the home counties, right? Surrey, Hartford, St Albans. I mean, it's just such a vibrant mix of Waitrose.
Me and people
shoppers.
From Kent would have so much in common. But we did. Mainly a shared bonding over, warm lager. But I think in terms of like expanding your horizons, making you a sort of fuller, more rounded person, I would say go. And you'll have a great time, and you'll come out of it.
I kind of agree. I only really started having an okay time in my like second year.
Okay.
I think my like freshers is supposed to be like this time of bonding, but all these strangers coming together, and it's a new like stage of your life. And I just didn't get any of that. I think my social life picked up in my second year.
And then
academia never picked up.
I think I upset quite a lot of people from what I remember. But no,
because we live next. Do we live next door to each other? Or am I imagining that?
We did live next door to each other in rented accommodation.
You're a great character. You never upset me. Oh, you always at next door. It's like, oh, we live next to a Tory. We found a Tory student. There's only like 10 of you. It was like Pokemon Go. We'd found
the common at night. And that's where we were.
But like, I think so. What was it that frustrated you about the experience?
Again, specifically pertaining towards politics and history, that's all I can comment on. It was just the lack of access to different and divergent opinions. I don't mean my opinion. I mean, I would like to have said to a tutor, I want to learn about X. Who do I need to read? And can I write about this? Or can we, if we're doing studying we did the Third Reich, and if we're looking at that, you want to look at alternative contributors that would discuss and dissect that event or the empire or anything like that. And it wasn't. It was a very singular process. It's very much, we've discussed this before, globalism, nationalism. It was very much, every single thing was approached from a liberal globalist perspective. And I don't think that's particularly useful or indeed healthy as a platform of discourse, because it is so... Like you say, you're just told to imbibe all this stuff and spend all your time doing it. Mm. And you're the customer. What if you don't want it?
And did the social life element not counter it? Like,
Life was great.
I imagine you were loving like going to like Come As Your Mum nights or Smurf parties. I think I saw you at a few school discos, I'm sure.
I think there's only so many times I can wear women's clothing and feel... that I'm breaking new ground. It's not like being J. Edgar Hoover. There's no real rush out of it. So, like, no, I think it's a much to do about nothing, really. I think even if... I agree with Nia. I think if you went out and worked first, you'd probably value it a lot more and just get on with it when you got there. But, in short, in terms of what it's for, in terms of it being, this new business, it is about employment, it is about jobs, and if that's what it's about... students are truly consumers, but I suppose at the same time you could easily attack me for that by saying, well, if the consumers want to feel safe and if the consumers don't want to be challenged and they want to feel that there's only one way to do things, how do you then go against it?
You're probably in the minority in having so many opinions and ideas at university, when it's like 18-year-olds, have you met like an 18-year-old lately? They don't want to be asked their opinion. And I think a lot of us felt the same at the time. So okay, back to the task force then. So your initial gut reaction, both of you, is to actually go back to the heads of the unions and go, yeah, we should embrace this backlash and tell people, go to university a little bit later in life once you know what you want to do.
Mm.
But what if you want one of the, one like a job at a top 200 company or whatever the phrase is, it a FTSE 100?
FTSE
100. Because a lot of companies won't employ people without a degree.
I don't agree with this at all. I got, as soon as I finished uni, I was trying to get into shipping, and I wrote to a couple of brokering houses and kept calling them, you know, once every 2 weeks, and until I found out, you know, the man or the woman I had to speak to, and just build up a rapport. But if you want to get a job in an exclusive company, you've got to show commitment and initiative. That's how you get into a business.
Yeah.
And even now, because I'm running my own small firm, if someone rang me up who was 18 and said, I want a job, this is why you should employ me, I would straight away want to talk to he or she about it. Because that, you know, the different channels and that kind of attitude is, even though even if you were flooded with applications, there are people who are naturally, you know, suitable and naturally gifted and have talents, they will rise and you will choose them. So I think that way of doing things is no better and no worse than having a degree. The degree is just, I just don't see what the point of it is, unless it's specifically vocational, as Nia says. I don't get it.
You got any tips or tricks that I can like use to try and make this uni thing appealing? I'm not going to have him in the campaign for sure. he's going to know it. Here, a few words from our sponsor, Alex.
I think you've got two people who are kind of on the same side about universities. I'm so sorry.
It's fucked.
I know so many people who've gone into jobs that haven't gone to university, and they've gone into jobs 18, 19, 20 years old, and they are earning twice as much as I am. They are higher up in the company. They are pushing and committed, and but because they've been there that way and they've had that work ethic since they were 17, 18 years old, and only just thinking about what they want to train in and what they want to go back to university for. So,
smashed it.
Yeah,
there you go.
Gonna call them back, so I've been overruled. I'm a big fan. Like you can tell, I had the best 3 years ever.
And good, and I'm glad. I'm glad that you did.
Yeah, and I'd recommend it to anyone who's up for that. But yeah, don't go in thinking that you're suddenly gonna learn a load of things. You idiot. Anyway, thank you both for helping me with Task Force.
Quiz?
The quiz. We end every episode.
I never win these.
Oh no.
Well, let's see. Because I mean, I don't know if it's going to play to your strengths, to be honest. My questions. I always like to prepare the questions at the very last minute. If you think the rest of the podcast is unprepared, the quiz is real, like me grabbing any kind of website I can find, seeing what the Metro has got going on. But anyway, 5 questions. You say your name if you think you know the answer. And then if you get it right, you get a point. Simple. Let's begin. Question number 1. What did John Lewis get rid of this week?
Oh, blimey. Oh, was it something to do with advertising?
No.
Oh, bums.
It's to do with their children's wear range. You're not even going to...
I'm not even trying.
You're not even
My mind has just gone blank.
I think Alex did actually just stare at the ceiling for a little bit there. why are you wasting my time with this bollocks? They got rid of boys and girls labels for clothes because they want to stop reinforcing gender stereotypes.
Yeah, like biology isn't real, is it? Yeah.
So even dresses with flowers and skirts will carry unisex labels.
What kind of self-respecting suburban middle-class shop doesn't want to sell normal clothes for people?
Yeah, like, it's going quite far.
It's a bit far, isn't it?
I think people are a bit up in arms about this one. Going, shouldn't we have had a few more meetings about this? I guess, yeah, John Lewis is for the more conservative
mark
voting.
You name me a Labour supporter who isn't a champagne socialist who's going to spend 150 quid on an orange frying pan from Le Crucier. You know, it's definitely not, that is not the gig to be pumping that shit out.
Don't have a go at the...
I love Le Crucier. I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm just saying it's a very specific dynamic.
Of course you do. So that's happened. You can complain about that in your next meeting of the minds. Question number 2. As I mentioned earlier, Taylor Swift is back with a new song called Look What You Made Me Do. Which 90s novelty, I think they were the 90s, novelty pop act have been given writing credits on the new single?
OJ Simpson. I don't know.
Novelty pop act. Yep. Any clue? Yeah. A duo that had a big hit.
Ann and Deck.
That would be great. It was Right Said Fred.
Oh, right. Okay. No, I wouldn't have got that.
It interpolates I'm Too Sexy.
Okay. Did you know there's a Facebook group called Taylor Swift for Fascist Europe? It's very weird. So they basically just get quotes from various obscure righty sources and they spend all their time superimposing pictures of Taylor Swift into prominent meetings of the Third Reich. It's very strange, but it's quite funny and it's definitely worth checking out.
Okay. I'll add it to my to-do list. Question number three. Game of Thrones, the biggest TV series in the world in history or whatever, finished up its penultimate series this week with two of the main... Spoiler. With two of the main characters shagging. How are they related? They are related. They are family, but how?
So...
This is guessable.
Yeah. They're like cousins or something. No.
They're not cousins.
Auntie and nephew. Or
correct.
Something. Is that right?
She is his aunt.
Yes.
Was Jamie Lannister banged?
That's some separate incest.
Oh no, that's the brother and sister.
Sorry, it's a lot of incest.
They're twins. This is new incest as of the final episode where he shagged his aunt, but he doesn't know. So.
Got it.
Question number four. What is the new eyebrow trend sweeping the globe?
I know this one. Actually know this one.
Yeah? What is it?
The wiggly squiggly eyebrows.
What's that?
They're spiky eyebrows, aren't they?
Not according to the Metro.
What are they calling it?
So the Metro is saying that the newest trend is you cover your eyebrows in foil.
Be this week's trend, because last week's trend was definitely squiggly eyebrows.
Squiggly eyebrows.
What does that do?
So it's just a look. You just put a little bit of foil over where your eyebrows should be, and that's you looking
like a cyborg.
Like kitchen fleek. Foil?
Any premium type of foil. Apparently plastic will also work, so if you just want a bit of coloured plastic.
Which
on
celebrities are doing this?
I don't know about that. I'll send you the link afterwards. We'll post it.
If it isn't backed up with a credible source, if Beyonce is not doing it, I'm not buying it. Right.
Makes sense.
And then final one. Cuffing season has begun.
What is
cuffing?
Hitting your children?
It's a season dedicated to
as the leaves turn golden brown. Get out the smacking glove. No, it is not beating the kids.
Well, that's me out.
Cuffing season. I've absolutely no idea.
I can tell you now that it is.
We are rubbish at this
place. It's the period during autumn and winter in which avid singletons find themselves seeking to be cuffed or tied down by a serious relationship because the cold weather and prolonged indoor activities causes us to be lonely and desperate.
Is that cuffed down in a sexual way or just in a relationship?
No, not sexy.
No one's getting pissed off.
Yeah,
right, 100% no one's getting peed on.
It's just like, cuff me down and let's Netflix binge.
Okay. Well, I do that year round, so...
So you just constantly cuff?
Just constantly cuff.
Wouldn't nesting be a better...
Yeah, I feel like that would be a better word.
Isn't nesting that implies like little babies though?
No, nesting is like being like home, but
yeah, like spitting on twigs and yeah, like.
Now we're back to the S&M thing, but
never left it.
Okay, so that's the end of the quiz. I think
a particularly bad one.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
One point was scored, and that was by Nia.
Yes.
Very good. Yes. So, beginner's luck plays its hand again. I don't think you ever benefited from on your first episode. But that's all we've got time for on This Might Be The News.
I survived.
You've survived, and it's been a pleasure being back, and a pleasure having you both on.
Thank you.
Listeners, we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to This Might Be The News. If you enjoyed this week's episode, then we would love it if you shared it with all your friends. Even better would be reviewing it on iTunes, which will help other people find us. Cheers!